Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour, an editorial review, is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit my webpage. That's georgegordon.org. Again, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour, an editorial review, brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on eminent domain and takings cases when we return. Many of the lessons that you hear on the Law Hour are just a small part of my 2-week school on courtroom strategy and procedure, and this class includes lessons that range from what to do and what not to do at the arrest or when you receive a complaint, a summons, or a citation. And you'll learn how to make a chronology of the names, dates, times, places, facts, witnesses, and evidence, just like the police do. And you'll learn how to conduct a hearing, present evidence, cross-examine witnesses, ask questions, make opening and closing statements, enter exhibits into evidence, write motions, briefs, affidavits, and asseverations. And I don't just cover what goes on in the courtroom. You'll learn preliminary procedures such as arraignments, bail setting, what papers to file, how to put exculpatory evidence into the record, and how to present your legal and lawful positions, what issues are appealable, how to preserve those appealable issues for appellate review, how to create those appealable issues. Now, there are 28 essential elements to master in courtroom strategy and procedure, and you'll learn them all here at the law school in this class. For more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, just call the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Be sure to ask for my free general law CD package while you're at it. Remember, that's a 4-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free of charge. Courtroom strategy and procedure is available on compact disc for home education. If you're online, you can go to the website georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Just click on to the email and send me an email request for that free general law CD package. That's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about eminent domain. Eminent domain develops into what's called a takings case. Taking, that's when the government takes your property without just compensation. And we're reviewing a treatise here sent to us by one of my students. It's a little short treatise written by Henry Lamb. Henry Lamb also, they got a little thingy in here about Henry. Let me see. This came from World News or WorldNetDaily.com. And let's see, what else does Lamb do here? He's a publisher. He puts out, Henry Lamb is the executive vice president of the Environmental Conservation Organization and chairman of Sovereignty International. So he's involved with Environmental Conservation Organization and Sovereignty International. All right, we're reading a little story here. When we broke off last time, the Sheelys were told that if they didn't plead guilty, they could go to jail for a year, and they'd be fined for the offense unless they pleaded guilty. So they went ahead and pled guilty, and now they're awaiting their sentence. All right, here's another lesson to learn. The only thing government has to threaten you with is jail. If you can't go to jail, you can't do this. Let me repeat that. If you can't go to jail, you can't do this. You know the old adage that says you can't beat City Hall? Well, they're exactly right. Because when City Hall threatens you with jail, and your knees buckle and your mouth goes dry and you don't know how to deal with this problem and I can't go to jail, then the only other solution for you is to go sit on the back of the bus, isn't it? You got to have something more between your legs than hair. That's the bottom line. Now, some people have it and some people don't. And if you don't have it, you have to develop it. Now, I'm going to tell you a story or two as we progress along, and I'll show you how to deal with that. But now, once you get to the point where, yeah, I think I could go to jail. I remember the first time I went to jail. It was kind of a traumatic experience. I hadn't been locked up before. And I'd been instructed on what to expect and how to expect it. And sure enough, everything worked out just about the way the instructor had told me that jail would be. And I was in over the weekend and came up on Monday for arraignment and posted bail, and out I went. You have to go to jail in order to set an issue. Remember, this is called the Ashwander Doctrine, Ashwander versus Tennessee Valley Authority. There has to be a vital controversy at issue. There has to be a damage. And typically the damage occurs when you've been arrested and jailed. This guy, had he been arrested and jailed, and then assuming that instead of pleading guilty or not guilty, he had filed an action against the other side and then came in and pled with a plea in abatement, he could have taken that takings case through, won the takings case, and then won the underlying case with a dismissal as a matter of law. He didn't know how to do that, of course. He probably hired a lawyer, and his lawyer, remember, works for the state. All lawyers work for the state. Didn't you know that? Lawyers are all licensed by the state. All lawyers work for the state. So when the state of Florida brings an action against you and you hire an attorney to defend you, you're hiring the state's attorney to defend you. Does that make a lot of sense? Have you ever thought about that? Let me explain this to you so that you'll understand. You know, most people, when they get into trouble, all their friends mean real well, don't they? Their friends say, you know, Bob, what you need is a good lawyer. What you need, Bob, is a good lawyer. What you need, Mr. Shealy, is a good lawyer. Okay? And we've heard that all of our lives, and we know that anybody that would be dumb enough to represent himself has a fool for a client. Don't we? So you can't represent yourself, and you can't come into court without a lawyer, so you have to hire a lawyer. Now, of course, we don't want to hire a mediocre lawyer or a bad lawyer. We need to hire a good lawyer. Now, think about this. Can you tell me, what does a good lawyer look like? Have you ever seen a good lawyer? Do good lawyers wear turbans on their head and long flowing robes? And bad lawyers, they wear Levi's and tennis shoes, and mediocre lawyers wear a three-piece pinstripe suit. In the yellow pages of the paper, do they have them divided out, good lawyers, mediocre lawyers, and bad lawyers? Just how would you tell a good lawyer from a bad lawyer? Well, I'm a plumber by trade, so how would I tell a plumber, a good plumber, from a bad plumber? Well, because I'm a plumber, I could interview a man, and I could determine if he was a plumber. I could watch him work and determine whether he's a good plumber or a bad plumber. But unless you're a plumber, you couldn't do that. You wouldn't know whether a plumber's a plumber, a good plumber, a bad plumber, or a mediocre plumber. It takes a plumber to tell a plumber, in the same way it takes a lawyer to tell a lawyer. Now, I could tell a lawyer, but why would I need a lawyer? I am one. Why would I go hire an attorney? I know the profession all does that, and we're all taught that from the time we're little children. And when a lawyer gets charged with a crime, we got a judge up here that was charged with a crime the other day, and the judge went out and hired a lawyer. He's got a lawyer representing him in court. He probably believes that. He probably believes the same crap he's been teaching for years. I've said this time and again, if I'm a plumber and you call me out to your job, and I work on your house. Next day, I've got a plumbing problem in my house, so I don't fix my own pipes. I go call a plumber. What kind of a plumber would call a plumber to fix his pipes? I know, I guess it would be an incompetent plumber would call another plumber to fix his pipes, huh? See how crazy this is getting? Now listen, here's the definition of an attorney-client relationship. Attorney-client relationship from Corpus Juris Secundum. It says his first duty, that is, the attorney's first duty is to the courts and the public, not to the client. That's the first sentence. Did you hear that? Let me tell you this again. An attorney's first duty is to the courts and the public, not to his client. And wherever the duties to his client conflict with those that he owes as an officer of the court in the administration of justice, the former must yield to the latter. If there's any conflict between the court and your lawyer, he follows the court's needs and you second. Now, who pays this lawyer his fee? Well, it's you. But if there's any conflict between you and the court, you pay the bill. Sit down, shut up, and fold your hands and ride the back of the bus. Now, how do you like that? Now, there's another factor that comes into play here. Let me flip the page over. A client is somebody who applies to a lawyer or a counselor for advice and direction in a question of law, or someone who commits his cause to the attorney's management in prosecuting a claim or defending against a suit in a court of justice. One who retains the attorney is responsible to him for his fees, and to whom the attorney is responsible for the management of the suit. One who communicates facts to an attorney expecting professional advice. Clients are also called wards of the court in regard to their relationship with their attorneys. Did you know that when you hire an attorney, you are a ward of the court? Now, let's get your pencils out here, boys and girls, and let's think about this for a second. You get charged with a crime. Now, here are the Sheelys. Picture yourself in the Sheely's position. They're charged with cruelty, conspiring to commit an act of cruelty against dumb animals. They can go to jail for a year. They can be fined for the offense. Now, the truth of the matter is, on a first-time offense, nobody ever goes to jail for a year on cruelty to animals. The animal wasn't killed, and he saved the animal from being killed by the panther. The worst that was ever going to happen to him was he was going to get probation and a fine. Now, if he did this three or four times and had been prosecuted three or four times, he might be facing a year in jail. Repeat offenders face the maximum. Yeah, and it's true, the judge could throw the book at him and give him the maximum the first time out, but that's highly unlikely. Highly unlikely. But he was cunningly coerced into waiving his rights due to his ignorance. Now, whenever I run across a student like this Sheely fellow here, I can tell you right now, this guy cannot be helped because he doesn't have anything between his legs. He's totally ill-prepared, doesn't have a plan. All he can do is whimper, whine, and cry. He can write letters to his congressman and cry. He can't do anything for himself. So let's learn a lesson from this guy. Next time somebody from the government says, "I'm here to help," you want to be suspicious of him. Government and government agents are not your friend. Not your friend. They're your servants at best. And lately, these government servants are not servants, they're masters. So this guy Sheely over here was afraid of going to jail for a year, so he went ahead and pled guilty. Let's suppose now, for the sake of our discussion, that we want to understand here, what is it that the government is, or what role is the government and the attorneys playing in this play, in this scenario? So the Sheelys have a complaint, and it's addressed the state of Florida versus David Sheely. All right, so question number one is, well, who is my antagonist? So write the answer down. It's the state of Florida. Now, the state of Florida is a sovereign person. It's an entity. It's like a corporation. It's like Microsoft. It can sue and be sued. The state of Florida is a corporation. And this corporation is complaining about you, complaining about Mr. Sheely, complaining about your performance, your behavior. You did something you weren't supposed to do, or you didn't do something that you were supposed to do. In this case, he did something he wasn't supposed to do, and that was he was cruel to an animal. So the state of Florida comes out and says, "Well, Mr. Sheely, you broke one of our rules. We've got laws and rules here, and you broke one of my rules. And I want a damage. I want you to pay me money. I want you to go to jail. I want you to pay the penalty clause, the penal clause in our contract. We have an agreement. You're the citizen. I'm God. I'm the state. And you breached my contract. You violated my law. That's the position Mr. Shealy was in. Now, the state of Florida says, I want to take you in to my court. So what court are we going to go into? Is this the Court of Justice of Venezuela? Or is this the First District Court of Germany? Now, sir, this is the District Court or Superior Court of Florida. Who created that court? Well, wasn't it the state of Florida? Well, gee, isn't it the state of Florida that's complaining about your behavior, Mr. Shealy? So we got the state of Florida complaining about your behavior, and the state of Florida says, I want an adjudication, and I'm going to take you into my court. All right, in this court, we'll call it the District Court of Florida, there's a fellow called the judge. May I ask, Mr. Shealy, who pays that judge's salary? Isn't it the state of Florida, the same party who's complaining about your behavior? So every Friday, this judge in the state of Florida's court, and you're being complained about, the state of Florida complaining about your behavior takes you into the Florida court before the Florida state judge. Also in this court is a fellow called the prosecuting attorney. This prosecutor now gets paid every Friday. Who pays his salary? Isn't it the state of Florida, the complaining party? Now, let's see. We got the complaining party, the state of Florida, takes you into the state of Florida's court before the state of Florida's judge, and now before the state of Florida's prosecuting attorney, and the state of Florida is paying the judge and the prosecutor. Now, we got to have witnesses against you. So let's bring in the policeman, the Department of Fish and Game. Who's paying their salary, these witnesses that the state brings in against you? Aren't these witnesses being paid for by the state? Now, let's see, where are we? The state of Florida has a complaint about Mr. Shealy's behavior, takes you into the state of Florida's court before the state of Florida's judge, before the state of Florida's prosecutor to be witnessed against by the state of Florida's policeman. Now, the judge in this courtroom looks at you and says, gee, Mr. Shealy, do you have an attorney? Mr. Shealy says, no, I don't have an attorney. The judge says, well, tell you what we're going to do. This is bargain day at the local courthouse. If you can't afford an attorney, the state of Florida will appoint an attorney to represent you. Would you like that? At no cost to you whatsoever. Now, where are we? We got the state of Florida complaining about your behavior. Who takes you into the state of Florida's court before the state of Florida's judge, before the state of Florida's prosecuting attorney to be testified against by the state of Florida's policeman and to be represented by the state of Florida's public defender. Licensed by, guess who? The state of Florida. Now, in case you don't qualify for the public defender and you want to hire private counsel, you can go out and hire an attorney who is licensed by, guess who? The state of Florida. Now let's see, where are we? We got the state of Florida complaining about your behavior, who then takes you into the state of Florida's court before the state of Florida's judge, before the state of Florida's prosecutor to be testified against by the state of Florida's policeman, to be represented by the state of Florida's licensed attorney. You got that, boys and girls? And this is called a fair trial. A fair trial. Now, if that's fair, could you tell me what is it that would be unfair? If that's not biased, could you tell me what kind of a trial would you expect in an unbiased atmosphere? Let's put the shoe on the other foot, boys and girls. Why don't you come here to the Gordon Farm? And while you're here at the Gordon Farm, I say to you, I'm going to complain about you, Mr. Shealy. I don't like the way you drove across my field. You trespassed. And because I'm complaining about you, I'm going to make a complaint about you, and I'm going to charge you with trespass in violation of the law of Gordon. You have violated the law of Gordon in that you've trespassed on my property. Now, we're going to try you in the Gordon Court of Justice. We'll just do that right here in my office. Now, I'm going to bring my son Dirk in, and he'll act as the judge. So we'll have the Gordon Court of Justice, and I make the laws. And we're going to try you in the Gordon Court of Justice according to the Gordon laws and in front of George Gordon's judge, his son. And then we got to have a prosecutor, so I'll have my wife act as prosecutor. She'll prosecute you. I'll have my daughter come in and testify against you. She saw you driving your car across my field. And then, just in case you don't know how the Gordon Court of Justice works, I'll have my hired hand, Bill, represent you. Now, let's see. We're going to charge you under the Gordon Court of Justice by Gordon law for trespassing against or on the Gordon property. We'll try in the Gordon court in front of the Gordon judge, the Gordon prosecutor, the Gordon witnesses, and have you represented by one of the Gordon's hired hands. Would you call that a fair trial? Well, if you wouldn't call the Gordon Court of Justice a fair trial, why in the hell would you call the Court of Justice in Florida a fair trial? You know, the first thing we need to understand here, boys and girls, is that this isn't a fair world, that the world is not filled with fairness. The world isn't a perfect place. The world is filled with dirty, unscrupulous government trough suckers who are trying to take your property, your life, liberty, and property, who don't want to work and don't want you to benefit from your own labor. They want to take it away from you. And that's where reality is located, boys and girls. Now remember, the Sheelys and Jacobson were charged here in this case with conspiracy to cause damage to a dumb animal. And so this guy Jacobson didn't plead guilty. He had done nothing illegal. He simply filmed the panther attack, and the Sheelys had asked the game commission to prevent by simply removing the panther. So Jacobson and the Sheelys had it in their mind that what they wanted to do was to force the game commission to remove the panther. That's like saying, I want the Department of Transportation to move the freeway. They're not going to do that. You're going to have a confrontation here, and you're either going to get paid or you're not. Now, in this case, the Sheelys aren't going to get paid, and what's worse, they're going to get charged with, prosecuted, and convicted for a crime which is totally collateral to the central issue, which is the takings claim. And Mr. Sheely and Mr. Jacobson never made a takings claim, so they never made any claim against the government. But the government made a claim against the Sheelys and Jacobson. They said, hey, you've breached your fiduciary obligation as citizens of Florida in that you're prohibited from being cruel to animals. You people are cruel to animals. Now, Mr. Lamb jumps into the game and he says, but wait a minute, this issue should be about taking private property. And Mr. Lamb is exactly right. This case should be about taking private property. So my question, Mr. Lamb, is, well, why didn't you take this case in as a takings claim? Well, we're going to go argue our takings claim in front of the local court. Now, let's take a look at what's going to happen here. You come into the local court and you're charged with cruelty to animals. All right, so let's get on the witness stand. We get on the witness stand and we say, well, I went out and I took a goat and then I staked it out in my front yard. That's what the government said you did. Their witness came in and said, Mr. Sheely took a goat and staked it out in his front yard. And I was expecting a panther to come by and attack and kill the goat, like this panther had come by and attacked and killed several of my goats in the past. Got that? And sure enough, this panther came by and attacked that goat. All right, now, factually, you look at the statute, and the statute says, thou shalt not torture or be cruel to animals. And then it'll give you a definition. It'll say, well, being cruel to animals is to put an animal in such a circumstance that would cause this animal pain, suffering, anguish, fear, or death. Did Mr. Jacobson and Mr. Shealy put this animal into a position that would cause fear, death, or injury? Yeah, they did that. Factually, they did that. Now somebody says, yeah, but they were doing it because the panther was killing their animals. Excuse me, boys and girls. Let's stay on point. Stay on point. See, the government charged you with cruelty to animals. The subject matter, taking, is not on the table. We can't come in here and talk about takings. This isn't the court that listens to takings claims. That's another court down the hall, third door on the left. It's called eminent domain and takings. There is a court that listens to taking claims. This is not one of them. This is the court that listens to cruelty to animal claims. So when you come in here arguing about takings, this court says, we don't listen to that here. All we're listening to here is cruelty to animals. And in your zeal to prove that the state had a cat that was out here eating your goats, see, the law does not say that a panther eating a goat is cruel. But when human beings put a goat out there where the panther can eat it, that's cruel. I don't make these laws, boys and girls. Don't get mad at me. I'm just telling you how this game's being played. And these people aren't playing this game to win. They're playing this game to lose. Furthermore, when their antagonist, the state of Florida, came in and said, and besides that, you better plead guilty to this. And Mr. Shealy, okay. And he pled guilty. He might as well be a mental patient locked up in a mental hospital, and the guard comes by and says, hey, you better tell the doctor you're really feeling crazy today. Oh, yeah. Oh, doc, I'm really feeling crazy today. That's a guardian-ward relationship, all right. Now, Jacobson is a co-conspirator with Mr. Shealy. He's the one, remember, that proposed to Mr. Shealy that they photograph this event by staking a goat out here. So he's going to come in, he's going to testify, isn't he? Let me give you an illustration. Let's suppose you're charged with tax evasion. Let me ask you a question. Did you file and pay your 1999 Argentine income tax? Now just listen up. You listening to me now? Did you file and pay your 1999 Argentine tax return? Yes or no? Don't give me any of this BS. Just yes or no. You did or you didn't? And I can just about bet that all of you people listening to me right now, the answer is no. I did not file my 1999 tax return. Now, let's suppose for the sake of our discussion here that you're charged with failing to file and pay your 1999 Argentine income tax. And so you come into court and you know the answer to this question, so you want to get up and you want to testify, and so you get up and you tell the court, well, I'm not an Argentine, I'm an American. And the prosecutor jumps up and says, objection, goes beyond the scope of the pleadings, would you admonish the defendant? The judge looks over at you very sternly and he says, now, Mr. Gordon, we're not here to talk about citizenship. We're here to talk about whether or not you filed and paid your 1999 Argentine income tax. Citizenship is not an issue here. And you're sitting there saying to yourself, well, why shouldn't it be an issue? I'm not an Argentine. Why should I file Argentine taxes? Okay, well, now that you've been shut down on that, you come back and you say, well, I don't live in Argentina, and besides that, I've never even been in Argentina. And the prosecutor jumps up and says, objection, goes beyond the scope of the pleadings in that we're not here to talk about where Mr. Gordon lives. We're here to talk about whether or not he filed and paid his 1999 taxes in Argentina. And you're sitting there saying, well, wait a minute, I shouldn't even be on trial here. I'm not an Argentine citizen. So you come back and you say, I never even went to Argentina. I never lived in Argentina. And I'm not a resident of Argentina. And I'm not domiciled there. And I don't own any property there. And the prosecutor jumps up and he says, objection, this goes beyond the scope of the pleadings again. We're not here to talk about Mr. Gordon's address, Mr. Gordon's resident, Mr. Gordon's domicile. We're here to talk about Mr. Gordon's taxes. That's where the Sheelys are. They're in here talking about the Third Amendment to the Constitution, quartering troops. They're in here talking about why that cat is over here eating my goats. The subject matter, boys and girls, is did you or did you not act in a cruel way to an animal? That's the subject matter. Your opponent already took your queen. You lost that queen off the chessboard. And now you're sitting over here bellyaching about the loss of your queen. You better be more concerned about the loss of your rooks now. This is called pleading. Pleadings. The most important part of the entire trial procedure is called the pleadings. These people don't even know what the hell pleadings are, much less how to use them. Well, you can bet the government knows. And when this guy came in and pled not guilty, remember that? You remember watching Perry Mason, don't you, boys and girls? You all know how to plead. And when they bring you in and they say, well, now, the state is complaining and says that you were cruel to this animal. I know how to plead that. Not guilty. All right, so here's the complaint. It says, on or about the 14th day of June 2005, or this tried 2004, then and there in the county of, whatever this county is, that you, David Sheely, in conspiracy with Mr. Jacobson, Michael Jacobson, did stake a goat out with the intent to have it attacked by a panther. Isn't that factually correct? And you come in and you plead not guilty. Now, the only thing the jury has to decide is, did you or did you not stake that goat out? And was the purpose for staking that goat out to attract that panther or not? The statute already says that if you stake this animal out with the intent of causing this animal some kind of harm, fear, death, or pain and suffering, that's cruelty to animals. You see, factually, you have done all those things. But you did all of those things for another purpose. It was to gain evidence in a takings claim that you never filed. Remember? Now, had you gained the evidence and gone into court and filed it, then you could use that evidence in the takings claim. You wouldn't even be in this court. You'd be down the hall, third door on the left, talking to another judge about the government and their panther coming in here and eating your goats, and that court isn't going to be asking you if you were cruel to the goat. That court doesn't listen to cruelty to animals. They only listen to takings cases. So if the government comes in and says, oh my God, he was cruel to this animal, the judge in that court, you know, you stand up and you say, objection, we're not here to talk about cruelty to animals. We're here to talk about the government's panther eating my goats. And the judge will say, objection sustained, and the government's witness will shut up about cruelty to animals. We're here to talk about taking goats. This is a takings claim. You put the shoe on the other foot, boys and girls. Now, that's the way that game ought to be played if you want to play to win. This guy doesn't know how to play to win. Hey, we got to take a little break here. We're at the midway point. I need to remind you that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world over the Internet 7 days a week also. For more information about the Gordon Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it's open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to the homeschooling page at the website, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events from the scriptural perspective, 7 days a week. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, management, or staff of this network or this local independent radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to the website, georgegordon.org, or call the Law School Direct, 417-273-4967. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or the phone number, 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about eminent domain in a takings case. Henry Lamb wrote a neat little article here. It was published on WorldNet Daily, picked up by one of my students, Kathleen. Kathleen sent it to me, and I thought, well, let me analyze this for all of you students out there, and let's see if we can't learn a lesson here about lawyers. I showed you that lawyers, when you hire an attorney, that attorney reduces your status to a ward of the court. Now, if you were to enter this case pro se and go in and argue your case as somebody who is competent, somebody who is legally competent, you walk in the door and you say, my name is George Gordon, I'm legally competent, and I'm here to defend. What's your complaint? Your complaint, or our complaint, is that you were cruel to this animal. Now, as it turns out, under the statute, in all probability, factually, this guy is indeed guilty. And I want to show you something I mentioned earlier about pleadings, and that is that the most important part of this whole process is called the pleadings. The most important day that occurs is when you come in to plead, and the judge brings you in and says, well, you've been charged with these crimes. Do you understand the allegations made against you? Yeah, I understand. And how do you plead to that? Guilty or not guilty? So the judge actually tells you the answer to the riddle. See, the judge doesn't tell you that there are seven pleas that you could enter. You could plead guilty, not guilty, stand mute, plead nolo contendere, double jeopardy, plea in abatement, or non-assumption. He doesn't tell you that. He doesn't want to muddle this up. The judge is a salesman. He's here to sell you a guilty or not guilty plea. He doesn't care whether you plead guilty or not guilty. Once you buy the product, sales complete, no cash refunds. But he has to get your consent. So he says, how do you plead guilty or not guilty? So you have to turn around and say, gee, judge, I don't want the red death pill and I don't want the green death pill. I want the white life pill. I want to make a plea in abatement, or I want to plead non-assumption, or I want to plead nolo contendere. I want to do anything but plead into a fiction of law. Now, let me tell you a little story here. Let's suppose, for the sake of our discussion here, that you're sitting in my classroom and an MP walks in, military police. And the military policeman says, by the way, I'm looking for a fellow named George Gordon. And there's five of us here in the room, and I'm at the head of the room. I raise my hand and say, I am George Gordon. And the MP says, well, Mr. Gordon, you're under arrest. And I say, gee, what'd I do? And he says, well, you're charged with a violation of the Uniform Code of Military Justice in that you're absent without leave from Fort Lewis, Washington, a violation of Section 2254 of the UCMJ. And I look at all of you students and I say, can you see how ridiculous this is? I mean, look at this MP walks in here, a bunch of civilians, and he's charging me with some kind of a military crime, being absent without leave from Fort Lewis, Washington. And here we are in Isabella, Missouri. Right? And I want to ask you right now, can you see how preposterous this crime, this charge is? Isn't that just about as preposterous as charging Mr. Sheely here with cruelty to animals? I mean, here's the government panther marauding around the neighborhood, eating Mr. Sheely's goats, and the government's got the gonads to come in here and charge him with cruelty to animals. Now, isn't this about the same thing? And I think most of you would agree with me. You'd say, yeah, that's really preposterous. Now, what's this MP going to do? Well, he's going to handcuff me, throw me in his Jeep, and haul me off. Where's he going to take me? Maybe up to Springfield before the grand jury? Is he going to take me into Springfield before the federal judge so that we can plead? No, he's going to haul me back to Fort Lewis, Washington, throw me in the brig, bring me up before the provost marshal, who's going to ask me the magic question. He's going to say, now, Mr. Gordon, how do you plead to this charge of being absent without leave from Fort Lewis, Washington? Guilty or not guilty? Ah, well, you know, we've all watched Perry Mason. We know how to plead, don't we? So we go in and we plead not guilty. The minute I plead not guilty, I plead into a fiction of law from which I cannot win. And why is that? Well, because only a soldier could plead guilty or not guilty to being absent without leave. I'm not a soldier in the Army. I'm not a soldier. I don't have an enlistment contract. But the minute I plead not guilty, when I come into trial, I cannot argue in my defense that I'm not a soldier, because it goes beyond the scope of the pleadings. And the minute I say, but judge, I'm not a soldier in the Army. And the judge, you know, the prosecutor's going to jump up and say, wait a minute, objection, that goes beyond the scope of the pleadings. We're not here to talk about whether or not Mr. Gordon is a soldier in the Army. We're here to talk about whether or not he's absent without leave from Fort Lewis, Washington. You see the point? You see the place? You see the way the game is being played? The minute you plead not guilty, the legal effect of this is the judge is asking you, how do you want to move forward, Mr. Gordon? Would you like to plead into this fiction of law? The answer is, no, judge, I don't want to plead. I want to demur. Demur? Well, you can't demur. Demurs have been abolished. That's what everybody tells you. Demurs have been abolished. Let me read you a little section here from Considerations Preliminary to the Classification of Defenses from Koffler-Reppe on Common Law Pleadings. Parties must either demur or plead. After the declarations, the parties must at each stage of the proceedings in the action either 1. Demur or 2. Plead. And if you're going to plead, it has to be a dilatory plea or a peremptory plea or a plea in bar. So here's the explanation. If it is assumed that every liability consists of 2 elements, a given combination of facts or events, plus a rule of substantive law attaching legal consequences to those facts or events, and if it be remembered that in order to state a good cause of action, one need only set out the combination of facts and events, the court takes judicial notice of the rule of law without its statement. This question arises, in how many ways may the defendant resist the alleged liability asserted in the declaration? So when you get this complaint, how many ways do you have to resist these allegations? And the answer is 2. What can you do? You can plead or demur. Does the judge say, well, now, Mr. Sheely, do you want to plead or demur? Now, what is a demur? Well, a demur reduces the controversy to a single clear-cut issue of law to be decided by the court. If you plead, it reduces the controversy to a single clear-cut issue of fact to be decided by the jury. Mr. Sheely decided that he wanted to plead not guilty, reduce this to a single clear-cut issue of fact. What is the issue of fact? The prosecutor came in and said, Mr. Sheely and Mr. Jacobson committed an act of cruelty to animals by tying a goat up in the front yard to be attacked by a panther. Mr. Sheely and Mr. Jacobson walked in and said, we agree with the prosecutor that we want to come in and argue whether or not we tied a goat in the front yard to be attacked by a panther. That's called pleading into the fiction of law. So the prosecutor comes in with the statement of the facts. The statement of the facts are that Sheely and Jacobson tied a goat out in the front yard so that they could photograph it being attacked by a panther. That's called cruelty to animals under the statute. Well, there's nothing to argue there. Of course they tied the goat in the front yard, and of course they tied the goat in the front yard to be attacked by the panther. The reason was to gather evidence of a crime that was being perpetrated against them by the Department of Fish and Game, that is, the taking of their private property without just compensation. None of that can be raised in defense, because it goes beyond the scope of the pleadings once they plead guilty or not guilty. In the case of Sheely, he pled guilty. That's the end of the argument. In the case of Jacobson, he pled not guilty, and for him, that's the end of the argument. So now all the prosecutor has to do is come in with the factual allegations. And, of course, they did all of these factual things. You see, once you plead guilty or not guilty, you can't win. It's impossible. So what Sheely and Jacobson wanted to do was to reduce this controversy to a single clear-cut issue of law to be decided by the court. There's nothing to be decided by a jury here. Nothing. It's a legal issue. Juries don't listen to legal issues. Now, I understand juries should be listening to legal issues, and I understand the old common law, but I'm just telling you, the Roman civil law has replaced our common law, and that isn't the way this game is being played. So if you want to go make that argument, be my guest. It isn't going to get you anywhere. I might get you put in jail. You're not going to win. If you want to win this game, you got to play this game by the rules, and you got to play the game by the rules better than anybody else. Now, what is a demur? A demur says, yes, I did it, so what? So a general demur says, yes, I did it, and a special demur says, so what? I had a right to do it. It's my goat. I owned it. I was gaining evidence of a crime being committed against me. So what he wanted to do was to demur, but he doesn't know how to do that. So let me explain how this demur works. Confronted with the alleged liability with a declaration of the facts only, when you look at this complaint that says you're cruel to animals, the facts only, it's called the minor premise. It omits the statement of the rule of law relied upon, which is called the major premise. The rule of law is the major premise. The factual allegations is called the minor premise. Now, the defendant was compelled to demur or plead, and he was bound to pursue one or the other of these two courses until issue was tendered. That is, if he desired to sustain his defense. Well, in the case of Sheely, he didn't desire to sustain his defense, so he pled guilty. The other guy did not desire to sustain his defense, so he pled not guilty. Can you see what just happened? One guy pled guilty. That ends the controversy. He admits that he did what the law says he can't do. The other guy pled not guilty and said, let's reduce this to a single clear-cut issue of fact. Did I or did I not stake this animal out in the front yard in violation of the statute? Hell, he can't win that argument. They've got the tape that shows that he staked the animal out there, and they photographed the animal being attacked by the panther. In other words, they furnished the evidence that the government needed to convict them on the minor premise, the factual allegations of did you or did you not stake this animal out in your front yard to be attacked by the panther. Had he demurred to the action, he would have said, of course I put the animal out there to be attacked by the panther. So what? It's my animal. It's a property right. And I'm not going to plead into this fiction of law. I'm going to plead non-assumpsit by way of confession and avoidance. And furthermore, before this case can go to trial, I'm going to walk in down the hall, third door on the left, and file an action against the state for $1.5 million for a taking of my property. Then I'm going to come back in here and file a motion for a plea and abatement so that we can postpone this action until the major premise, the issue of law, can be decided first. Once the issue of the taking is decided, that'll also decide the issue of cruelty to animals. Now, I mentioned a fellow, young fellow one time, who happened to be one of my students up in New Hampshire, and he does the Passover, and he had a Passover lamb, and he did the Passover with the Passover lamb, took the lamb over there, cut its throat, bled it, and cooked it on the spit, and had the Passover, and his wife, his ex-wife, charged him with cruelty to animals. So he comes up in front of the judge, and he's charged now with being cruel to the animal. Does he plead guilty or not guilty? No. He pled non-assumpsit by way of confession and avoidance. Then the judge chimes in and says, well, wait a minute, we can't accept that plea here. So I'm going to plead you not guilty to protect your rights. And my student objected, and he said, I object. I didn't come in here to be represented by you, Judge. I came in here to represent myself. I'm here pro se, and you asked me plainly how I wanted to plead, and I told you plainly I want to plead non-assumpsit by way of confession and avoidance. I do not want to plead into the fiction of law. The issue here is not whether or not I killed this animal. I killed them. The issue is not whether or not this is cruel and unusual. That's irrelevant and immaterial. The First Amendment to the Federal Constitution prohibits government from interfering in my religious practices. Period. I have a constitutional right to do this. And if I plead guilty or not guilty, I cannot win. So he filed a motion to waive jury trial. That was number one. Then he came in with a motion to represent himself. That was number two. Then he comes in with a motion to move forward with a demur. He answered the complaint with the demur, entitled Demur, an Answer to the Complaint. Now the judge says, well, okay, I hear you. Now let's go to preliminary hearing. He filed a motion for a preliminary hearing. A preliminary hearing is for the purposes of determining whether or not a crime has been committed. The minute you plead guilty or not guilty, you admit that a crime has been committed, but you deny that you're the person that committed the crime. Now, in the case of Sheely, he pleaded guilty, so he says a crime has been committed and I committed it. In the case of Jacobson, he comes in, pleads not guilty, and says, in effect, I admit that a crime has been committed, but I deny that I committed the crime. You need to look for somebody else. That isn't going to fly anywhere. Can't win on that. Now look at my student. He walks in, he says, well, I'm going to plead non-assumpsit by way of confession and avoidance. I'm going to answer the complaint. See, if you had a civil action, you would answer the complaint in writing. You get a criminal action, you don't answer the issue. You don't answer the complaint in writing. Why not? Why not? You see, you walk in there because you've been watching Perry Mason, and Perry Mason always stands up there and pleads into the fiction of law and says, not guilty. All right, let's try it this way. Let's suppose that you're a soldier in the Army, and you're charged with being absent without leave from Fort Lewis, Washington, and you do, in fact, have a liberty card, excuse me, not a liberty card, but an enlistment contract. Pleading guilty or not guilty is the correct plea because, after all, you're in a regulated enterprise under contract. Regulated enterprise under contract. Guilty or not guilty is the proper plea. But remember, I said, I'm not in the Army. I'm not a soldier in the Army. For me to come in and plead guilty or not guilty is the kiss of death. The minute I come in and plead not guilty, I admit to being a soldier, I admit that a crime has been committed, and I deny that I'm the person that committed the crime. The issue that I want to argue is, am I or am I not a soldier in the Army? The issue that Mr. Sheely wanted to argue is this or is this not a taking of my property? The government comes in, changes the subject matter, and says, is this or is this not cruelty to animals? And Sheely is ending up arguing cruelty to animals when what he really wants to argue is the taking of my property. But he doesn't know how to get the issue before the court. He's in the wrong court, in front of the wrong judge, arguing the wrong issues. Issues that he cannot win. Not going to catch me walking into a military court pleading not guilty. I'm not a soldier in the Army. The correct procedure here is to plead non-assumpsit with a written answer. File a subpoena, deuces tecum, and compel the government to bring in the enlistment contract. Raise the issue of the enlistment contract before you plead. Demand a preliminary hearing to determine whether or not a crime has been committed. Because if you're not a soldier in the Army, you could not possibly be absent without leave from Fort Lewis, Washington, in violation of the statute. Now let me back up a minute. I'm George Gordon. I'm sitting here in Isabella, Missouri. I'm in my classroom. The MP walks in the door. He says, I'm looking for George Gordon. I want to charge him. I got a complaint here. He's charged with being absent without leave from Fort Lewis, Washington. Get the drift. So I say, okay, well, I'm George Gordon right here. Now let me ask you this question. Is George Gordon absent without leave from Fort Lewis, Washington? Is George Gordon absent without leave from Fort Lewis, Washington? Hell, I'll stipulate all of those facts. Fact number one, George Gordon. I'm George Gordon. Fact number two, I'm absent. Fact number three, absent from where? I'm absent from Fort Lewis, Washington. Without leave. Let me stipulate to that last fact. I don't have anybody's permission from Fort Lewis, Washington to be here in Isabella, Missouri. I'm George Gordon. I'm absent from Fort Lewis, Washington, and I'm absent without leave, and so is everybody else in the classroom here with me. We're all absent from Fort Lewis, Washington. Wherever you are listening to this broadcast right now, are you absent without leave from Fort Lewis, Washington? Just to answer the question, yes or no. And the answer to that question is yes. You're absent. You're in Tallahassee, Florida. You're in Los Angeles, California. You're in New York City. You're anywhere but Fort Lewis, Washington. So you're absent from Fort Lewis, Washington. Have you got anybody's permission from Fort Lewis, Washington to be anywhere that you might be listening to this program right now? And the answer to that is no. You don't have anybody's permission to be where you are right now from Fort Lewis. You're absent without leave from Fort Lewis, Washington. Now plead into the fiction of law and plead not guilty and see if you can win. The argument that you want to make, boys and girls, isn't am I or am I not absent from Fort Lewis, Washington. The argument you want to make is, as a matter of law, do I have any duty to be in Fort Lewis, Washington? And you'd only have a duty to be in Fort Lewis, Washington if you were a soldier, wouldn't you? So as you can see here, the Sheelys lost their case, along with Mr. Jacobson, because they didn't know how to do the pleadings. Pleadings. Well, I'm about out of time. I've got to cut it off right about here. We'll come back next time and we'll take a look at this thing of pleadings. And I'll tell you about a guy named William Hage and how this very same thing occurred to Hage. Hage wrote a book called Storm Over Rangelands. Exact same government interference, exact same government trick that was done to the Sheelys, done to a cattle rancher out in Nevada. And I'll tell you that story next time on the Law Hour. All right. You're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to the website georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It's open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to our homeschooling page, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. Well, producer says time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll have to see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.